The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network
on News Talk.
Sits precariously on the edge of a dark winter, an energy crisis and military sabre rattling, we take a deeper look at President of the European Commission Ursula von der Leyen. I'm joined by Irish Times Europe correspondent Naomi O'Leary to profile a politician that we probably know not a whole pile about for most people in this country. Naomi, let's start at the beginning. She has a very interesting background. Where did she grow up?
Ursula von der Leyen grew up in Brussels. She's comes from a family of European civil servants. So her father was Ernst Albrecht, who was quite an important person in the development of the European Union and its institutions. She lived in Brussels until the age of 13 and then went back to her native Germany.
And as a function of her father's role, she ended up having to effectively go into quasi-hiding and have protection for many years of her early life.
That's right. As a student, she went to London. She was studying there and under an assumed name. She had the name Rose Ladson when she was there. And this was because it was a time of political tension in Germany, and her family was informed that there was a risk of left-wing extremists kidnapping her, which was a tactic at the time. So she went to London and she seems to have basically partied. She said she did more living than studying at that time, and it was a taste of freedom for her.
And she is therefore multilingual. She was brought up in speaking German, speaking French, and has fluent English.
That's correct.
When she emerged from college, she did emerge with a medical degree. She is Dr. von der Leyen.
She's Dr. von der Leyen, and the first period of her life as an adult after college, she was a doctor specialising in women's health. She got married to a man from a prominent German family, and he's an academic, and they started a life together. She had lots of children. She has seven, and she was a housewife and a practising doctor for much of that time, only going into local politics at a later stage.
And am I right in saying that by virtue of his academic career, they spent some time living in the US?
Yes, that's right. They were in California for a time.
When she then decided to get into politics, what was it that catalyzed that move?
It's an interesting question. Coming from a political family herself, I think that, she does see herself a little bit as the heir of her father, next generation in this, in this sort of family business, which, is something we're fairly familiar with ourselves in Ireland. She's part of the Christian Democratic Union. That's the party in Germany of Angela Merkel. And she started in local politics and then came into national politics in the cabinet of Merkel, starting off as ministerial roles of being in charge of issues like family and social care, social policy. So not big major roles of state, but coming in as someone who was a little bit on the liberal side of her party. She used to be more pro-gay rights than some of her party were, and emphasised things like gender equality. She came in that way, and then her kind of big major appointment was to be made Minister of Defence.
And how long ago was she Minister for Defence, and how long did she hold the portfolio?
She was Minister of Defence until she became European Commission Chief, so up until 2019. Her tenure at Defence was a little bit difficult. There were a couple of scandals, particularly over scandals about waste in contracting and the procurement of contracts from private firms.
And is she seen as something of a fractious figure in German politics? Because didn't Germany abstain from nominating her to her current role?
That's right. She's also a failed presidential candidate in Germany. Angela Merkel is said to have backed her as a presidential candidate, but she lost out ultimately with her party picking somebody else. Because of this cloud over her, because of her tenure at the defense ministry, she wasn't particularly popular. It's probably worth explaining how you get to be president of the commission, how it works. So essentially in the EU, the most powerful force in deciding what happens are member state governments. They rule the roost, really. And the president of the commission is essentially picked by them. Now, the European Parliament has tried to make this more a decision of the citizens by introducing a system whereby when you have the European elections, the political group that ends up with the most votes has the right to nominate someone for the European Commission. So in that case, in 2019, it was the EPP, the European People's Party. That's the group that Fine Gael is in. But their candidate, he's called Manfred Weber, was not convincing to anybody. So he didn't end up actually getting approved and by the member states and going forward as a candidate for the commission. And instead, another EPP figure, who's von der Leyen, was proposed actually by Emmanuel Macron, the French president. He'd met her in her function as defense minister a few years earlier, and he'd been impressed. She's someone with French, with German, a woman who looks good, you know, and he thought that she would be good in the role. And making a proposition like that was a good sell to Germany, you know, to propose a German. She's also from the EPP, so she sort of slotted in there, and the member states agreed that she could go forward as the candidate, and she was then approved by the European Parliament.
And how is she viewed as a politician and as a political operator? I mean, if you take somebody like a Christine Lagarde, who would be seen as being hugely bright, being immersed in the system, on the other hand, you have somebody like an Angela Merkel, who is deeply pragmatic, hugely experienced, very successful in terms of foreign policy. Where does she slot in that spectrum? What are seen as her strengths and weaknesses?
I would say she's a little bit more of an enigma, mostly because of her extremely tightly controlled public image and public engagements. I was thinking how she's a little bit like the late Queen Elizabeth in that sense. She's so controlled in public that people can project things on her. It's interesting to see how she's grown into her role since becoming president of the commission, because actually, if you look at her record of proposing policies, it's been quite a radical period for the development of the EU. We've had this massive joint borrowing scheme that was put forward. It was previously unthinkable during the COVID-19 crisis. That's a step towards fiscal integration in the EU. And that was very much owned by her as a policy. So was the vaccine procurement, another step forward. Now we have her trying to put her political stamp on trying to fix the energy crisis in the EU. So putting herself forward as the sort of champion of these major EU-wide policies, it increases her profile, makes her sort of more presidential figure and somebody that people are hearing about. Also comes with risks, of course, because it can all go wrong. And we can see that with, you know, there is criticism of this energy plan.
Is she ruthless? Because when you look at her handling of Phil Hogan and all that went around Golfgate, she didn't exactly wrap arms around him to protect him.
That's an interesting affair. In that case, initially, the first day when this sort of scandal arrived in Brussels, European Commission spokeswomen came out and defended Mr. Hogan and said he'd assured them that he'd followed all the rules, and they wholeheartedly defend him. But it was only his relationship with von der Leyen then fell apart, because further reporting revealed that he hadn't been totally straight with them. So that's the story that went on behind the scenes in the commission. And once it sort of came out that they had actually gone out and publicly defended him based on information that wasn't right, because further stuff came out, that was when she essentially decided to cut him off. She didn't consider him to be indispensable. This also worked for her because she got to have the Irish government had essentially given consent for this by suggesting that, you know, they didn't stand by Phil Hogan either. She then had quite a lot of say over who the next Irish candidate could be. It became known that the preference was for a woman, so that she could achieve her goal of gender equity among the European commissioners. So she was able to increase her power in the European Commission because of that. Excuse me. She is, as I say, someone who's hugely controlled, both in public image, but also in how she puts through policies. So during the pandemic, her administration used a lot of emergency procedures. They put through things without much curtailed scrutiny, both within the commission and also in terms of using emergency legislation to pass laws, which means they don't go through the full scrutiny of the European Parliament.
And obviously there's going to be another challenge like the pandemic in terms of dealing with the Ukrainian war. Can I ask just in conclusion one thing on that, Naomi? Where you describe her background, where she would have, her life would have been threatened by East German operatives, by as a function of that, by the Russian state, or by the USSR as then was. If she's now facing into a situation where she is very overt in her support for Ukraine, where she is regularly seen dressed in the Ukrainian flag colours, most recently at the State of the Union, what can we expect of her if she's now leading the European bloc effectively against the old enemy?
I wouldn't overemphasize what you've just said about her having some old grudge about that. I mean, as defense minister in Germany, she was very much against arming Ukraine. And she defended the German approach, which was, you know, very much that of the reign of Angela Merkel, of trying to fix the situation with Russia through dialogue and giving dialogue every chance possible. So, you know, she's very much of the mainstream there. The invasion of Ukraine has obviously caused a complete reconsideration of this policy. And I do think there is a genuine commitment to Ukraine, and also a sense that what Ukraine is fighting for is to be, is for the European dream, to have rule of law, to be a thriving and economically thriving country. And that they see hope in the European Union in a way that actually invigorates those who believe in the EU, because they say, yes, this is actually what it's all for. Before we all got cynical about this, you know, Ukraine reminds us of the old dream of what Europe's supposed to be.
Naomi O'Leary, thank you very much. Naomi O'Leary, Irish Times Europe correspondent there.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.